to depend on any outside agency tends to confusion, sorrow, and fear. Body and soul may fail, but God, my strength is mine, my own forevermore. Psalm 73:26. Are we not continually perpetuating our illusion behind which we hide while repeating the phrase, God is love, God is wisdom, God is truth, God is life? God can never be a reality to us while we hide behind our illusion. If we then have accepted ideas, concrete beliefs, a mind that is not pliable, where illusions become solid, where there is no movability whatsoever in the mind, then how can God be a reality? The fact is that what is behind the mind is real, not what is in the mind. The mind itself is but a vehicle of expression, a vehicle through which we think and create. But that which creates is itself the reality behind the mind, and therefore our illusions are held in the mind, and if we then hide behind them, they make a screen in front of us. We will never know of what reality means. Only by understanding that which is not true can we arrive at that which is true. Are we not the expression of life itself, the expression of the living presence? Then we must refuse to let tradition, beliefs, creeds, nationalities, etc., which are in themselves the cause of our separateness, limitation, and illusion, influencing our thinking. If there is anything in your mind that is influencing your thinking, one way or another, then there is no pure thought. Pure thought must be free from all conditions, all beliefs, all preconceived ideas. Pure thought is thought originated in the self, that is not tarnished with anything whatsoever external to itself, but must think purely from itself, knowing itself to be. Knowing itself to be the creator of all things, knowing itself to be the self that is in every other self. And unless this is known, this awareness is yours, then there is no pure thinking. Awareness means that you are aware that you are the thinker, aware that you are the creator, aware that you are the self behind every other self, aware that you are the living presence that is eternal and ever-present. We must do our thinking free from tradition, free from beliefs and limitations, free from separation. Jesus knew himself to be one with God the Father, free from all limitation, and at the same time discerned the error that kept man in bondage. Thus he came to set men free, that man would not accept this freedom, this free gift from God. You see then that it is the Son of God, who is able to recognize the Father, to know the Father, and also to know anything that is preventing the Father from manifesting in him. Therefore, Jesus knew the error that existed in man's mind. He came not to heal the body, but to heal the mind of man. And if he healed the mind, he healed the body as well. This was the great work that he came to do. And the more we see and read of his works, the clearer we see what his work was. And we see decidedly that he knew the error in man's mind that prevented him from being the Son of God now at this very moment. Because if the mind was then filled with tradition, filled with rote, filled with belief that held man in bondage, he could not be free, therefore could not think freely. Men, to be free, must think freely and purely, free from all limitation. These lessons are very deep, but I want you, as students, to know that they are for you to learn this great significance of that which lies behind your mind, the great mighty power that exists now at this very moment. It is not in the future then that you will become children of God. If in your mind you think that in the future you are going to be children of God, the sons and daughters of God, it will always be an image in your mind, it will always be tomorrow, and it will never be at all, because it will just be an image in your mind. If then you recognize this now, the Master said, is time. Now is the time. Now this freedom that Jesus was showing men was not something in the future, but was ever present now. The future is but an image in the mind, and freedom in the future would always be an image and never a reality. It is not your family, your church, your nationality, your belief, your tradition that keeps your heart beating. You have only to listen to your heart for a few moments to realize that it is life alone that is pulsating, making you alive, making you a living being. You may have due regard to your family and all that makes up your individual surroundings that furnishes you with companionship, etc. But do not get your values confused. In my lecture last week, I quoted what Jesus said in Luke 14:26, Eastern text. He who comes to me and does not put aside his father and his mother, and his brothers and his sisters, and his wife and his children, and even his own life, he cannot be a disciple to me. A very stern and wonderful thing. Yet it is not so stern and so terrible when we recognize the truth behind it. He was showing you distinctly that there can be no separation, there can be no distinction. In your own family, there is separation in your brothers, in your sisters, your wife, your husband, your children. The great truth then is that there can be no separation between man and God to be the Son of God. When he said, I and the Father are one, he meant distinctly that all the principles of creation of the Father was in himself. Otherwise the Father and he could not be one. And his statement also, know you not, I am in the Father and the Father is in me, is a truth exactly for you. For it brings into your consciousness the exact awareness of your relationship to the Father himself. Knowing that he created you in him with all his principles, all the mighty power of his life, which was manifested in the Master himself. In that recognition then, when the mind is clear and free from all that hinders the expression of this Father in you, then you shall do as he did. Already did he not say, yes, these things I do, greater things shall you do, if you will but believe. Therefore I say, do not be caught up in the worship of the external, otherwise you will be lost in illusion. We must steadfastly refuse to worship family, nation, tradition, church, or any idol, or any external representative of the Christhood of any kind whatsoever. We must worship God in truth and reality, the Christ within. If we worship the external, we become slaves and are bound. Many would want you to worship these external things, so they could get you bound, held in the grip, in their grasp, and through fear they hold you in subjection. But the Christ came and told you that you were free, born free, and you were free now. Awareness, which is freedom, does not come, nor can it be induced from the outside, making you merely dependent on some stimulation. Awareness comes only, as I have told you, when you have discerned everything that is hindering the expression of this awareness of your own reality, one with the Father. If your thinking then is time, is conditioned by any of those things, you can never be aware. There's only awareness in the Christ, and that Christ is freedom, power, the Son of God. Know ye not that ye are sons of God? All stimulation is similar in effect. Whether you take a drink, look at a picture, have ideas, whether you go to a concert, or religious ceremony, or work yourself up over a neck, however noble or ignoble, stimulation breeds dependence, and stimulation, whether worthy or unworthy, causes fear and apprehension, which leads to illusion and not to freedom and truth. So if you then can be stimulated by any outside agency, then there is no awareness. You are caught up in that stimulation. There is only knowing that comes from within. That which in itself is the createdness and the love of God and the perfect of the Father, be ye perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. That means this. First of all, to mind your own business. Don't interfere in any other person's affairs. That's theirs, not yours. Have compassion and love for your fellow men, and a regard for everything that lives, and above all, awareness that you are the creator of every condition that exists in your own life. If your reactions to other people or what they say or do causes certain anxieties in yourselves, then I say you are the sufferer, you are the cause, not the other individual. It is your ignorance of the truth that makes these conditions in yourselves, that causes acid formations in your body through your anxiety, through your resistance. If then you are aware there is none of these things happening to you because you know the truth, you are the Son of God, and nothing on the world can ever affect you. Nothing can touch you. Anything that touches you touches your personality, all that is false, your beliefs, your ideas, your images, your traditions, your illusions. That's what it touches. And if you are hiding behind these things, you will never be aware of that which is real in itself, that is not touched by anything external to the self. If you can grasp this truth, then you have found the pearl of great price. Organized religions, politics, cults, nationalities become fetters which bind individuals into groups who become fiendish in their beliefs, which creates strife and misery. The wolf in sheep's clothing, all this is but a distraction from reality. Thus God feeling wanders away from the truth of the one in all and the all in one. It has become very difficult for many to withdraw from all these distractions, for the simple reason that most people cannot think purely. They only think with a background of separation, beliefs, limitations, whether they be religious, political, nationalistic. These cause the mind to become warped, narrow, and bigoted. So conflict arises, which further distracts their thought feelings. And they are further distracted again from awareness of the truth, because they are caught up in these things. I want you to look at the masses to see their minds. As Jesus saw the minds of the masses, those that were before him, he saw the error in the mind that was holding them back to the recognition of their own sonship. He saw so clearly before him a mass of people that were as children of God and yet were not aware, because they were bound with the beliefs, the traditions. They were bound by their antagonisms, their nationalities, and all that hindered the true expression of the one that knows no nationality, that knows no limitation, that knows no belief. That which is free in itself. I cannot tell you what it is. I cannot give you the secret. In your own heart you will know it when you shall find it. And it is there, waiting for recognition. It leaps forth with joy when you uncover it, takes its place in your daily living. It is only through constant awareness that thought feeling is able to extricate itself from the net of distraction. If we rely on others to give us cheer, hope, and courage, however noble they may be, we become lost in dependence. Are you then to be dependent on some outside agency? Or are you to become aware of the fact that you are the son and daughter of God? In that awareness comes the truth, the freedom of life. We find other groups in opposition to our own, and thus endless struggle and pain is of no avail. Cheer and happiness have not ends in themselves. We must search for that which is an end in itself. In this only we will find happiness. Any happiness or cheer that comes from outside is temporary, limited, comes in its passage. It disappears and it no longer remains with you. This that has the end in itself, that it is the beginning and the end, there is happiness and peace. The journey towards this lies within oneself. Every other way is a distraction leading to ignorance and illusion. It is not how to solve conflict and sorrow that must be sought. This leads to frustration. But if we journey on, being constantly aware of what is taking place about us, discerning that which is preventing the true expression of life that is one, then our journey will be a revealing process, an experience which is constantly liberating and creating. This, then, your journey will be constantly liberating and creating, liberating you from the bondage of things external to the self, liberating you from the reality, because you become aware of that which in itself is perfect, in itself is all power, in itself is the living presence that is eternal and ever-present. It is then discerning, becoming aware of everything that is surrounding us. It isn't that you've got to go to sleep. Some people think they shall find reality by going into a dead sleep of meditation, and there they can find reality. Whatever they find there, they take into their own prison. Not until you can discern the bars and doors of your own prison, these illusions, can you ever know what reality means. And you can meditate till doomsday, if you like. And then what are you meditating upon anyway? And some say, I'm meditating upon God. I'm meditating on God as something external to yourself. A God that you have made an idol of in your mind, and you think you've got to find him in your mind. What you find in your mind is but illusion, images, and beliefs. And your meditation goes for nothing. But if you're wide awake every moment of your life, discerning your surroundings, discerning that which is unreal, discerning the things that is hindering the progress, that creative principle that is animating your whole being, that principle that is revealing and creating in your daily living. Reality comes when the mind heart is still. What we crave for is not reality. How funny it is, people will say, I'm craving for reality. I crave for God. And God is so near. You're not craving for God at all. You're craving for something in your mind, something external to yourself that is going to fill the place of God, that is going to make this reality of yours an image, a belief. That becomes a hindrance to the expression of reality itself. If I could only take you in to the secret chamber of my heart, and there feel as I feel, and see all the things that are relative, discern all these things that are hindering the progress of this revealing nature of God, There you shall find the pearl of great price. Everything must be found within the individual themselves. I want you to think about it. I'm not telling you to think a certain way, but I'm telling you to eliminate from your mind that which will hinder your thinking. I'm not your teacher. God is your teacher. Your teacher is within you. I'm but the instrument, the mouthpiece of the Spirit. And as I give myself over to the Spirit, so shall the Spirit speak as it feels. You then shall listen. You shall feel in your own heart the feeling. And that feeling will arouse in you the awareness of something that's beyond your mind. There you shall find. Reality comes when the mind heart is still. What we crave for is not reality. Reality is that ever-present presence. And in this presence, all divisions, all distinctions dissolve away. The question is, do you want to be free? Yes, I ask you that question. And you have to answer it yourself. Very pertinent question. And if you will see the true meaning of these words of mine, and you ask yourself the question, do you want to be free? There are some things in your mind you want to cling to. Well, if you want to cling to anything in your mind, you do not want this freedom, because you'll be bound. I put that in big letters, because I wanted it to sink in. If so, then the ever-present presence alone is freedom, nothing else. And to be aware of this, the mind must be stripped of all illusion. To experience this freedom, we must not be dependent on any authority, any organization, or any individual. For dependence on any kind creates uncertainty and fear, thus preventing the experiencing of the real. In the outer world, there is no creative understanding, no hope. There is only separation, conflict, sorrow, bloodshed, and confusion. Only through self-knowledge, which leads to awareness of that which is beyond the self, comes the calm, undisturbed, serene composure of assurance that is not dependent. In the still silence, you become aware of the events of life. And as you watch, you become conscious of the inner. You become conscious of that which is watching the outer taking place. There is an awareness. You become conscious of the inner. When the inner is understood, the outer becomes clear. The outer, you will realize, has no significance of itself. The inner must be able to stand alone and see the outer with its cunning deceits, to withstand its elusiveness, its deception, its unrealness, in which so many are drowned. So you must stand alone and clear and see the relative world, even your thoughts, even your highest thoughts, must be discerned as something that is external to that self. Even your thoughts of love, your thoughts of peace and harmony, even the highest thoughts you can ever think in your mind, must be discerned also as that which is external to the inner self, that itself stands alone and clear, and is the self that is in every other self. That is the Father. That is the createdness. That is the power. And there is no other. It is common to hear people rebel against the conditions in the world in which they live, but they have never thought that the cause of these conditions arises from within themselves. So they follow a particular belief, and they look for anything that may confirm their belief. But if something arises contrary to their belief, they reject it without question. So they squirm and wriggle without thinking, and their ignorance still remains. How many people do that today? Anything that may confirm their belief that they read in a book, they will jump to it. And instead of freeing them, it makes them further bound. It binds them further and further. Don't you see what I am driving at? You must discern everything that is external to yourself. I said the highest thought that is ever possible to enter into your mind. You must discern it as something that is unreal, that is not a reality in itself. It's that which is behind thought. That which is behind thought is the createdness. I have found this to be true. I know. I told you before, I had passed through many schools and had taken honors and degrees in various universities with reference to various philosophies and things like that. I've studied all Eastern philosophy. I've studied, as you know, ancient literature, and I was conversant of nearly all the various religions in the world, and I could talk about everything. My mind was full of all those things. And when I went to the Himalayas, I met the master who came to me to be my guide and director. And I thought I might impress him with my knowledge. So I began to speak and tell him of the wonderful things, what the universe, all these things rising up in my mind, one thing after another. We talked for an hour, and I thought, now he will know that I'm a worthy student. He turned around to me and said to me, my son, it doesn't matter very much whether it is true or not, does it? Now you can imagine how I was stripped of all the illusion to be in the height of the feeling of ecstasy. That height of ecstasy where you feel that you have put yourself right on top of the world. And then the whole thing to be taken from you and you fall down flat on your face. Well, it is the biggest lesson that I ever had in my life. And it's the lesson that everyone must learn too. All these things mean nothing. The story of the man, the great intellectual, who passed over, and as he went over, he was welcomed by all the intellectuals everywhere surrounding him, and bottles of great men, written many books, and knew great many things. Great scientist, great philosopher, and so forth. And after he passed through many stages, one after another, he came to a door. And the shining one came to the door, and he said to him, what is it you want to know now? And this great philosopher, the great scientist, he said, I want to know God. Well, said the shining one, know nothing, and you will know God. He couldn't find it in his intellectualism. He couldn't find it in his thinking and his thoughts. He couldn't find it there. He could only find it when he became as a little child. Then you shall enter the kingdom of heaven. That brings me to the parable of the kingdom of heaven. given by the Master in Matthew 21:16. For the realm of heaven is like a householder who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard, and after agreeing with the laborers to pay them a shilling a day, he sent them into the vineyard. Then, on going out at 9 o'clock, he noticed some other laborers standing in the marketplace doing nothing. To them he said, "You go into the vineyard too, and I will give you whatever wage is fair." So they went in. Going out again at 12 o'clock and at 3 o'clock, he did the same thing. And then he went out at 5 o'clock. He came upon some others who were standing, and he said to them, "Why have you stood doing nothing all the day?" "Because nobody hired us," they said. He told them, "You go into the vineyard too." When evening came, the master of the vineyard said to his bailiff, "Summon the laborers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last and going to the first." And when those who had been hired about 5 o'clock came, they got a shilling each. So when the first laborers came up, they supposed they would get more, but they too got each their shilling. On getting it, they grumbled at the householder. "These last," they said, "have only worked a single hour, and yet you have ranked them equal to us, who have borne the brunt of the day's work and the heat." Then he replied to them, "My men, I'm not wronging you. Did you not agree with me for a shilling? Take what belongs to you and be off. I choose to give this last man the same as you. Can I not do as I please with what belongs to me? Have you a grudge against me because I am generous?" So shall the last be first, and the first be last. Now, this is a very difficult parable to understand, but it's quite simple when you understand the underlying truth of the Master. Here the Master shows that there is no distinction with those who enter the kingdom of heaven. They are all alike, the first and the last and the first, for there can be no separation, therefore no distinction. The Father gives generously even to the last. All are in the kingdom now, and even the last to recognize it is just as good as the first. They were there all the time, only the majority did not know it. In verse 15, old version, it says, "Is thine eye evil because I am good? How many are envious of others?" Here you see then that when you are working, you work not for anything, but for giving service. And by giving service, you are then given freedom, because service is freedom. The Master says, "I did not come to be served, but to serve, and even to give my life for the many." In Mark 10:35 and Matthew 20:20, there is somewhat similar request in Mark 10:35. It states that James and John, the sons of Zebedee, made the request. In Matthew, it says that the mother of the sons of Zebedee made the request. She was one of the ministering women who helped support Jesus and his disciples. The narrative in Mark is probably the correct one, so I will insert it here. In Mark 10:35-45, it says, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came up to him saying, Teacher, we want you to do whatever we ask for, he said. What do you want us to do for you? They said to him, Give us seeds, one in your right hand and one in your left hand in your glory. Jesus said, You do not know what you are asking. Can you drink the cup that I have to drink? Or undergo the baptism that I have to undergo? And they said to him, We can. Jesus said, You shall drink the cup that I have to drink, and undergo the baptism that I have to undergo. But it is not for me to grant seats at my right hand or my left. These belong to the men who have been destined. These belong to God, the Father. In the old version it says that the Father alone is the one who gives. And that is when the Father gives, he gives free to all. And it is not when one wants a thing. If then you do anything in this world for the purpose of gaining a seat in heaven, that seat is not for you. The one who serves in love is the one who gets his place in heaven. He who loves most, he who serves most, he who understands unity most, there then is the one who is loved in the kingdom of heaven. When the ten heard this, they burst into indignation at James and John. So Jesus called them and said, You know that the so-called rules of the Gentiles lord over them, and their great men overbear them? Not so with you. Whoever wants to be the great man among you must be the servant, and whoever of you wants to be first must be the slave of all. For the Son of Man himself has not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for the many. Here we see Jesus in his mind. He recognizes himself, first of all, the Son of Man, and then he recognizes himself as the Son of God. The Son of Man, you and I, have not come to be served, but to serve, and to give our life for the ransom of the men. Here we see the truth that there can be no personal influence, no earthly legal or religious potentate can have any honored place. The only qualification is love, and even those who imagine that they have an honored place because they may be a king or a queen or a bishop or a pope, these are but names man-made. We give on earth. But it is the quality of love and unity, not intellect, that is honored in heaven, where there is no distinction. We read where the Master tells the parable also, where the poor man was sitting by the roadside. No one took any notice of him. The dog came and licked his wound and his sore. So when Gaius, of course, passes over the other side, sees his glory, and he looks and sees the wonderful position that he holds. Then he cries, Oh, send someone to my brethren on earth and tell them the state that I am in. So Jesus said, Do you think that if they would not listen to one on earth, they would believe an angel if he came from heaven? There's a story of one who passed into heaven and learned all that could be known. Then he was asked, what more do you want to know? And he answered, now I want to know God. The great one said, know nothing, and you will know God. So they were indignant because the master would not promise them the right and the left places of honor. Then he said, that the one who waits upon you, who serves, he is the greater, the servant of all. Christ has not come to be served, but to serve, even to give his life for many. This does not mean that he would lose his life, but is able to take it up again, to show mankind the eternal life exists in men as it does in God. The Father has life in himself, and he grants the Son to have the same life in himself. What we see in the relative world of ours is a scramble between individuals, between classes and social life, between nations in a glorious game of murder, a wretched war with best modern appliances to slaughter people by the thousands in the name of peace and freedom. Therefore, what prevents man today from entering into rest is the same cause that produced the same effect in the time of the Master. They could not enter in because of their unbelief, and they limited the Holy One of Israel. They could not enter in because they could not see the Holy One was in all and was the only foundation for peace and freedom. Unless this is understood, strife remains. We are still looking at conditions as the cause of our misery, when all the time the cause is in our own mental attitude to these conditions. If we would only look to the first cause, the creative power within, that is beyond all creation and acts independent of any conditions, we will see that the Master is leading us into the understanding that we are made in the image and likeness of God. Man, therefore, can never separate himself from the inherent creative power. And for this reason, the Master shows us the limitless goodness of our Heavenly Father. Be ye perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. As the model for our own use, so that we can free ourselves from all strife and misery. He maketh the sun to rise on the evil and the good. He sendeth the rain on the just and the unjust. In other words, the Father is not concerned with existing or pre-existing conditions created by man, but continually radiates forth his creative love, so that good and evil will in themselves dissolve away, being relative terms in the world of man's own creation. And you say, this is good, and this is evil. And you are told in your church, you pray for victory, that your brothers may be destroyed by fire. This is good, because you pray to God that this shall take place. If there was ever any blasphemy at any time, that is blasphemy. Therefore, when we use the same creative power in the same manner as the Father himself, we will produce the effects of life and not of death. We cannot divest ourselves of the creative power, and the Master shows us the way it is for us to choose, and according to the way we employ our creative power, so shall it be unto us. This is the Master's words showing us exactly.
Therefore, I'm showing you in modern language
what the Master meant. As each condition is created from within and not from without, we begin to see the force of the Master's invitation, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." When we realize the true nature of the divine and the laws pertaining to the divine, we see in the Master's teachings that the creative power within us is the power behind any thought we may hold, and according to what is in our mind heart, so will our thought feeling be the cause and effect which continues through every link of the chain of existing conditions. I want you to study this carefully and read these words so that it will take you some time to absorb them and see behind them the great meaning that I am driving at. Therefore, if the originating thought be in accordance with the divine law of love and unity, the absolute goodness in itself of the intended creation of the Father will be inherent in the thing immediately created, and will also follow in the whole series of results following from it, irrespective of any present condition that may exist. Now I say, this is what the meaning is, and if you can see it clearly, now at this time, at this moment, the ever-presence is here. It is eternal and ever-present. If we accept this now, all conditions, irrespective of what they are, will fall away from us and we shall be free. Then I ask you again, do you want to be free? Is there something in your mind you want to hold on to? You know, the Master must have had a wonderful sense of humor when the rich man came up to him and when he said, "What can I do to enter the kingdom of heaven?" So the Master said, "Do this, do that." And he said, "I've done all that." Well, he said, "Sell all I have and give to the poor and come and follow me." And he saw the face of the man Jesus. And he said to his disciples, "How hard it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven." Because he could see how this man was hanging on to those things. It didn't mean that you've got to throw everything away and give everything away. That wouldn't give you the kingdom of heaven anyhow. Because the kingdom of heaven can only come through awareness. But he was showing the disciples how these things held the man in bondage. He was hiding behind his delusion and he could not free himself from them. Therefore he couldn't enter the kingdom of heaven. I could see the smile on the Master's face when he said those words to him, and you know, he walked away. How wonderful it is to understand the Master. He wasn't a sissy as people think he was. Gentle Jesus, meek and mild. He was a man of strength, of courage. He was necessarily gentle, but he was also courageous, because he knew nothing in the world could affect him, even in the last moment of his life. He knew he would still live. Spirit that raises me shall also raise you. Isaiah 55, 1, 2, "Let death and dry land be glad, let skippies rejoice and flowers, flowering like narcissus bloom, and ring with delight, sharing Lebanon's lavish growth, sharing in Carmel's splendor, and seeing thus the eternal's living power. splendor of our God. Let everyone therefore take part joyfully in building the temple of the living God, the glory of the Father and the brotherhood of man. Benediction. Blessed teacher of all souls, thou didst bid us to seek deep in the recess of our being to find the pearl of great Christ. Beliefs in which we thought we could find inspiration, we found what chaff before the winds of fear and doubt. But as we spread our wings of love beyond these boundaries of separation, thou didst leap into our hearts with joy. Still teach us, beloved teacher, for we still need the guidance of the Christ within, the good shepherd that keeps the fold complete. O beloved teacher,